here at a critical moment.
Hello, I'm Dan Brown.
And I'm Brandi Crawford Urriu. We are your TV BFFs, and this is an interview podcast about the TV shows that people love most. Each episode, we are bringing on a guest to discuss their top six shows of all time based on what we call the BFF criteria. With so much TV out there, we want to know, what are the best shows you've ever seen? What are your absolute favorite shows? And what are the shows that you would watch on a loop for ever.
That's right. Each episode, our guest will pick two shows in each of the three BFF categories, those being their best, favorite, and forever shows, all while choosing from the three genres of TV, which are drama, comedy, and all things unscripted.
So now let's get to our guest this week and find out what's on their BFF criteria. We are super excited to have this guest with us today. He is a former UCBNY performer. He's half of the sketch group Coker and Stratton, known to many as the guy from the Spectrum commercials, and he is still finding time to make everyone laugh with his hilarious Instagram and TikTok feeds at This James Coker. So please welcome James Coker.
Yay.
Hey. Ah. Thanks for coming on, James.
You guys, I got to tell you, this is a treat. What a ding-dang treat. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So how did you find the criteria, man? Like, do you watch a lot of TV? Was it easy to narrow things down? Was it?
I would say I watch an average amount of TV. Typically, I'll watch about an hour of TV a night, whatever show my wife and I are currently on. And then there might be something that I'm watching by myself after she goes to sleep, because I tend to stay up later. But guys, I found your criteria to be really hard, mainly because almost all the shows I wanted to pick were comedies.
Sure.
I do not watch a lot of reality TV. My wife and I recently got into Below Deck Med. That was like one of our pandemic shows that we watched a lot, which is like a good show, but I would never put it in any of these lists.
No, nor have we seen it on anyone's list for that matter.
It's good. It's like a show like that is good, like atmosphere. You know, it's something you can put on in the background. You don't have to pay attention to it 100%. But
it's what I love about Bravo.
Yeah, totally. It's like elevator music, but in TV form, right?
Yeah.
But I felt like this criteria was really hard because I just wanted to pick comedies. So I had to like really sort of like go back and think about the different shows that I've watched in the past and find shows that were dramas so I could have both a comedy and a drama in each category.
Right.
So I got to tell you, these categories, it's like doing an SAT question. It was pretty, it was pretty tough.
I hope enjoyable tough though, right?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm curious. So you mentioned you watch an average amount of TV an hour with your wife. And then what's the difference between what you're watching with your wife and what you'll watch solo?
I'd say genuinely I'll watch comedy by myself because my wife has a real job. She's a busy person and she doesn't have a lot of free time. So typically when we watch something together, she wants to watch something that's like of the moment, like she wants to be part of the zeitgeist.
Right. Something and important.
Yeah. Wants to be part of the conversation. So typically I feel like comedies don't fall into that category. We'll be watching like whatever the Game of Thrones is of that time. Like, but then she'll go to bed and I'll watch Pen 15.
Yeah.
You know?
What do you think was the last water cooler comedy? I'm trying to think of what's been something that like caught on. Maybe Schitt's Creek, like that last season.
Yeah, but Schitt's Creek was like very, everybody was very late to the game on Schitt's Creek.
Right.
People didn't discover it until it was on Netflix.
And I feel like it didn't become so much in the zeitgeist until we were already like on lockdown. So we weren't really at the water cooler anymore.
And it was, you could binge it. So it wasn't appointment television the way the sort of the old way television was being presented was. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the last, like of the zeitgeist comedy might have been Friends, but
you know what I'm thinking? The week to week, the only real week to week comedy that gets any buzz anymore is probably Curb Your Enthusiasm. Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I've been told, people have told me, if you ever go pitch something at HBO, do not say your show is like Curb Your Enthusiasm because while it gets a lot of critical acclaim and comedy nerds love that show, apparently it does not get a lot of viewers.
No, I don't think it does. And it's also very much like, oh, you mean the thing specifically from the brain of Larry David? It's like that. Okay.
It's like specifically Larry David.
Good try. So James, it sounds like there's going to be several comedies on just on the outside looking in. So before we get into your criteria, tell us a little bit about what your almost list, what almost made your top six. So if they're not your BFFs, they're still really good friends, but just on the outside.
So on my almost list first is Freaks and Geeks.
Love it.
Love that show. Watched it when it was on, I think it was NBC.
I think that's right.
Mm-hmm. And then I binged it again, probably like 5 or 6 years ago. And then my wife had never seen it. So we are now rewatching it again.
Ooh, right now.
Yeah. And it doesn't get old. Like it's still so good. And I bumped it to my almost because there were too many comedies in my list. And also there's only one season.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it would have been really interesting to see where they would have taken that show if it had been allowed to grow and find its audience.
Yeah, like would they have let them grow up?
You know, this, I feel like the natural progression for this show would have been like 3 or 4 seasons. Mm-hmm. Like some of them get held back. Some of them go to like community college. Maybe like Lindsay goes off to like state school on a full scholarship.
Right.
And
then Undeclared just kind of becomes a spinoff.
Yeah,
of exactly. Late seasons of Freaks and Geeks.
Exactly. But you look at the talent on that show, from the cast, from the writers, from the directors. It's so stacked. And you see cameos from so many people that are like have incredible careers now. You like Jason Schwartzman has a small part in one.
That's right.
Like a very young Shia LaBeouf is in it in an episode where he's like a mascot who gets hurt or whatever.
No way.
It's great.
That's funny. Yeah. Look, so you're watching it right now, which is it jarring to see like these uber famous people now, or do any of them feel like those actual characters and you could kind of divorce yourself from their fame at this point?
I think what's really interesting going back watching it right now is seeing how much they've grown as actors. Like you watch Jason Segel, Seth Rogen, and James Franco specifically. And while they're great in the show, you can see how green they are because like, I think they were all like 18 at the time. You can, and you're sort of used to seeing those actors a certain way, and going back and seeing them there, you're like, oh wow, you can see the difference. That's all I'm saying. But what's crazy is like the kids, like Martin Starr and Sam Levine and John Francis Daly, who've all gone down to have careers after this, they're so good. And I think it's probably because they're not overthinking it. You know right. what I mean? Mm-hmm. What was also very interesting is how good Busy Phillips was.
Yeah.
Like she was just so natural. You just like, you know, a lot of times you see actors acting and you didn't see that with her.
She really embodied that character. It's who I still think of her as.
Yeah, 100%. So yeah, it was really cool to go back and watch that.
I want to do a rewatch of that.
So what else, James? What are some other comedies that missed the cut?
So next we have Eastbound and Down, which is a show I absolutely loved.
So good.
Fun show.
One of the reasons I love that show so much is because Kenny Powers' character is like my favorite type of character in comedy. It's somebody who has a false sense of self. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Someone who thinks that they are incredible, but in fact, they're this buffoon. Like Michael Scott's like a great example of that.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, almost every character that Will Ferrell plays is a good example of that. They're essentially like big man babies, right?
Yeah.
For sure. So I love that show. I have The Simpsons, of course, which was going to be in my forever show, but I could only put one comedy there. So I took it out.
I was going to say that sounds like a really good forever option.
Yeah,
yeah.
Just totally.
Sheer number of episodes.
What era of The Simpsons is your fave?
I'd say like seasons 3 to 10, I think approximately, because I know when the show first started, they thought that Bart was going to be the comedic focus of the show. Mm-hmm. And then somewhere in season 1 or season 2, they realized, no, it's not Bart, it's Homer. Mm-hmm. And then they really started focusing on him to be the comedic focus of the show. And that's when it took off. And that's the same thing with Freaks and Geeks. When you look at the talent that was involved, especially early on in The Simpsons, it's just insane.
No, I loved it when FXX, premiered oh, we're gonna show all the Simpsons episodes. This right. was probably like, I was when I was still in the East Village, so it was probably like 2013, 2014.
Yeah.
And they showed every single episode from like beginning to where we're at. We Moses and I would like tune in and be like, oh my god, it's this episode. Oh my god, it's this episode. Like and like it just brings back such specific memories of like when I first saw those episodes. And it's like I still like I don't know. Do you have like a funniest episode? Because I know what my funniest episode is.
Yeah, funniest, like, or where your head goes when you think about it.
I'd have to go back and think about that. I just, for me, with The Simpsons, there's moments that I use in everyday conversation, and most people don't know what I'm talking about.
Like what?
Like, yeah, example.
Like Jenny and I will joke that, like when we're being lazy and like spending like a lazy Sunday or on the couch or whatever, sort of like not doing any of the chores we're supposed to do, that we're like Mojo the helper monkey. Do you remember when, Homer got Mojo the helper monkey and then made Mojo lazy?
Yeah.
Mojo just got
fat and started drinking next to him.
Exactly. So we'll be like really lazy on the couch and we'll be like, pray for Mojo.
I'll tell you, I'll look at anything Nintendo related and still think Super Nintendo Chalmers every time.
I love that.
My head, but when I think of the, yeah, like I think it's a similar era, because I used to watch that show with my dad growing up all the time. I would watch that with my dad in syndication and then Friends with my mom. It was kind of like our thing.
Yeah.
But my head goes to like the monorail.
The monorail.
Oh, the monorail episode's so good, because that's like it's a sort of a parody of the Music Man, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mine always goes to the X-Files episode that Mulder and Scully were on. And Mr. Burns has those big eyes. Like, it turns out he's the alien everybody's been saying.
Yeah, right.
That must have been the Treehouse of Horror, the yearly Halloween.
No, this was like a whole... Wait, was it a Treehouse of Horror, or was it just an episode where, like... I forget. All I know is that, like, Mr. Burns with those big, huge eyes, like, floating along, like, kills me every time.
Oh, and then Bart After Dark, season 8, fifth episode of season 8 is the one where they find out there's a brothel in Springfield.
I don't remember this one.
There's like a really great musical number in it where it's like, we put the spring in Springfield.
Now I'm remembering. Yes.
Actually, yeah. It's so good. That's a great episode. Like, if you ever see the meme of Abe Simpson walking through the door and then immediately and putting his hat on the rack and then immediately taking his hat and turning around and leaving.
Yeah.
It's because he's going to the brothel and like someone he knows is there. So he just about keeps going and turns around.
I love it. We want to get to the criteria, but a couple more. What else was just on the outside looking in?
Okay. So South Park, of course. You know, I almost put that on my forever show because it's been around forever. And like, it's interesting how that show started off as just being about fart jokes and whatnot, and like, you know, sophomore toilet humor to becoming one of the most socially aware shows, or yeah, a show that provides some of the most accurate social commentary to what's currently going on.
Mm-hmm.
I also have Veep, which I love, which goes back to people who think that they're high status but are actually buffoons.
Right, exactly.
I have Space Ghost Coast to Coast, which was a really fun one when I was a kid. For some reason, that show took me to another place. Like, I felt like it was a real show.
It was absurd. It was out there. Yeah. I remember it. Yeah.
I feel like with Cartoon Network's commercials and with some of their programming, they did a really good job in world building and making kids think that there was an actual place where all these cartoons lived.
Yeah.
And worked.
Yeah.
And like, I bought into it. I didn't care if it was real or not.
You want to go there. It was cool.
That's where it takes place.
And then the one drama that I have in my almost shows is The Americans, which I recently watched, which I absolutely loved. I love that show.
Oh, I love The Americans. That show, I think, was consistently, maybe not underrated, but kind of, or like overlooked. It kind of missed the prestige TV boat in a lot of ways that I felt was undeserving. It was like a really sharp, you know, well acted, the marriage dynamic throughout the whole, this spy thriller was just so good and so like emotional.
It was consistently consistent.
True.
Right. But yeah, it was a great show.
All right. Well, let's get to your TV BFF criteria.
Love that.
So we asked you to pick 6 shows in total.
Yes.
With 2 shows in each of the 3 categories.
That is correct.
Those categories are best, favorite, and forever.
You got it.
So your best shows,
uh-huh,
the ones you think they're the most artistic, well-executed, just kind of the overall best made shows you've ever seen. Your favorite shows are the ones that hold a place near and dear to your heart and just mean something to you personally.
Yes.
And the best way to describe the forever category is if you died tomorrow and in the afterlife, you only get to choose two shows to watch in order from pilot to finale over and over. What are they?
Right. And there are a couple rules. James mentioned it's not the easiest criteria. There is some strategy. So for each category, you have to choose from the three overall genres of TV, which are comedy, drama, and unscripted, with unscripted meaning everything from reality shows to documentary series. There must be multiple episodes, so no one-off docs allowed. But other than that, it can be anything. And there's no such thing as guilty pleasures here. So if you love it, let's talk about it.
I love that.
And the only other rule is you can, and this is the tricky one, the only other rule is you can't double up on a genre in any category. So if you pick a comedy in your best category, the other pick must be unscripted or drama. And that's where the fun comes in. So,
right,
James, let's get to it. What is the first show in your best category?
First show in my best category is Game of Thrones.
Ooh,
I like it.
Let's get into it.
You know, this might be a cliche pick because so many people really got into Game of Thrones when it came out, but I loved how immersive the show was. It did not feel like when you were watching the scene, anything that was involved in the scene, whether it be like the dialogue, the clothes, secondary and tertiary characters, it did not feel like anything was done without intention. Mm-hmm. And I also appreciated the patience that the show had. And a lot of that stems from the patience that the books had.
Right. Did you read the books?
I did. So I watched the first two seasons without reading the books. But what would happen is my wife had read the books and she would have to pause it every few minutes to explain to me what was going on.
Right.
So I don't think you have to read the books to enjoy the show, but I feel like you enjoy it like 100% more if you read the books, because there are so many, there'll be like a line here, like a quick reference that it's like the Hemingway's iceberg principle, where like a little bit of information implies a whole lot of shit that's underneath the surface.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And so like, you know, in the show, they'll make a quick reference to something that might've been like 100 pages in one of the books.
Yeah.
And so if you don't understand the context of that comment, it just goes right over your head. Or like, so, because it's like Game of Thrones sort of has like a medieval-esque aesthetic. Yeah. A lot of the characters look the same. Mm-hmm. So I think without me having the context of reading the books, I had a very tough time telling people apart.
Yeah. I think reading the books definitely helped. I was similar to how you got into Thrones. I watched the first season, read the first book, and I'm like, well, I got to know what happens next, and just couldn't stop and ended up reading, mm-hmm, I think all that were available at the time before season two came out. And I think you're right. You didn't need to read them to enjoy the show. Brandy, you didn't read the books, but you still.
No, I did. But then I was kind of like you, James. Like I actually didn't start watching it right away because I was like, I don't be liking like sci-fi, like medieval shit. Like that's right. Not who I am.
Yeah.
But then Moses, my boyfriend at the time, now husband, he and his roommates all watched it. And so I was like, okay, fine, I'll check this out. And then one day I was sick and home from work and I was like, okay, let me just put this on. And like, I ended up watching like the entire season in like a day and then was like, okay, let me, and I think it was when I got to the end of season two that I was like, I'm going to read these books right now.
Totally.
So James, I'm curious what you thought about the last two seasons.
So I was hesitant to put it in my in one of these categories because of the way the show ended. And I want to be as diplomatic as possible when I say this, because as an aspiring actor and like writer, comedian, etc., I do not ever want to insult someone to the point where like I audition for something that they're connected with and they're like, this person trashed me on a podcast. I will say that when the show started and, the creators, D.B. Weiss and Dave Benioff, adapted the books to television. Mm-hmm. I thought they did an incredible job.
Agree.
When I feel like the show deviated from its source material, I felt like the quality went down a bit. Mm-hmm. I still watched it. I still enjoyed it. I was not one of those fans who was like complaining about every little thing. I was still hooked. But I don't know why that is. I think part of that might have been they have a very small writer's room. So they probably were exhausted Like, I cannot imagine what it is like to create, write, produce that show, and then be on set for it and be sort of like supervising every aspect of its production. It's one of the most ambitious shows ever in the history of television.
Yeah. Did you see the documentary that came out after the finale?
I thought it was great.
I thought it was awesome. And similarly, like, I had feelings about the finale, and, you know, me specifically, I don't mind where characters ended up. I don't mind where storylines ended up. I just really wanted like four more episodes to flesh out those stories so that it felt earned.
Yes.
And I think that the creators got a bit, you know, ahead of themselves, or maybe some overinflated, you know, we've run this show so well for so long and we kind of can't be touched, so we think we can do it in these 14 episodes. Turns out you needed more.
100%. I do not think Daenerys's descent into madness was earned.
Right.
It felt like it came out of nowhere. I could see where it was going and I could see what they were trying to achieve, but we didn't see the transformation happen.
Right. Jamie hop, skipping and jumping from Brienne to friggin' Cersei in half an episode, you know, shit like that.
I agree. We needed more time for it to get to that point. And also, you know, I think writing that show is really hard. And I think they probably had a lot of other projects in development.
Yeah, the thing about Star Wars at the time.
Right. Yeah. And so I think they were just trying to wrap it up. And I think a lot of fans maybe thought they were shortchanged, but I still love this show and it's still one of my favorites of all time. So that's why it's there.
Yeah. And I think us book readers can feel a little bit better about it, knowing that we'll at least get some additional story direct from the source. Whether it's ever finished is another conversation, but we'll get a book six and then we can kind of adjust feelings from there. Mm-hmm. And also in just the Herculean effort that even those last seven episodes took, watching that doc, I'm like, oh, maybe they actually couldn't physically have done more content than what they gave us.
Totally. Right? Yeah. So. I mean, we're also spoiled. We're all sitting here on our couch. It's like there's like that TikTok meme where like somebody's watching like an elite athlete do something that they could never do. And then they make like one tiny mistake and they go, "You're trash, kid."
Yeah. Like this poor crew is like overnight shoots for 2 months straight to give us this epic battle. And we're all like, could it be a little bit brighter though?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, guys.
They're like, sucked.
That's kind of what I tried to keep in mind when I was like disappointed. I was like, I mean, but they made it though.
Right. Yeah.
As my Peloton instructors say, you got on the bike today.
Yeah, they got on that bike. They got on many bikes.
Yeah, they got on a lot of bikes and it was dark.
And then they CGI'd, and then they CGI'd the bike out.
Yeah.
They put a horse in.
But left the coffee in the cup holder on it.
I remember that. Yeah. That was very funny.
So James, your next best pick, we have to assume, is going to be a comedy. What's the best comedy?
Okay, so this was going to be my favorite category, but I had to bump it just because of like criteria reasons. Is 30 Rock.
Love it.
Wonderful.
And a lot of a big reason is because like that show is near and dear to my heart because I worked on that show for 3 years as a production assistant. And that was my first job out of college.
Oh, wow.
And it was an incredible experience. It was just so much fun. It was like, you know, like I remember like the first year and a half I went to work. First year and a half, I would go to work in awe. Like, I just like couldn't believe I worked on this show. So yeah, it's up there in my best.
So what's it like working on a show and then seeing the finished product on the line? And how does that reflect kind of knowing what goes into it? How did that reflect putting it in the best category?
I was already a fan of the show before I started working on it. So I started working on it like season three. And so I worked season 3, 4, 5 on it. And so I was already a big fan of the show. I think what I appreciated about it was I just like being a comedy person, like sketch comedy is my first love. And I felt like this sort of perfectly weaved in what I liked about sketch comedy into a narrative. And I appreciated how many jokes they could fit into each page. It was just like a barrage. And then there would be stuff that would be super subtle that you like wouldn't pick on first watch. And like the ability to explore with genre and different characters. And I just really loved it.
What were some of your favorite moments from being around set, on set? Some of the, you know, what you can share from behind the scenes.
So one of my favorite moments was there was an episode, I believe it was end of season three. I'd have to go back and check, called Kidney Now. Jack Donaghy finds out his father, who's played by Alan Alda, needs a kidney.
Okay.
And so in order to find a match, he calls in favors and gets all of these musicians to come do a We Are the World type song right. to get his dad a kidney. And the people they got to come on the show that day was just incredible. They had Sheryl Crow, Adam Levine from Maroon 5, Michael McDonald, Robert Randolph, the Beastie Boys. Who the fuck else was there? It was just like, oh, Wyclef Jean, Mary J. Blige. Like, it was just insane. So like, and they were all there at the same time. And like Moby, Sarah Bareilles. Like, it was just like, it was like such a random hodgepodge of musicians. Elvis Costello, Jesus fucking Christ. Oh my God.
Sorry. Still going.
I don't know if I can curse on this, but damn. But like the list, and I'm sure I'm missing someone huge right now, but whatever. It was like being backstage at the Grammys.
Yeah, it was, sounds like it.
The energy awesome. Was just insane, and you're just walking down the hall and seeing all these people. Probably one of the best memories I had when I was on the show. And then of course, season five, I got to be on the show while I was still a PA on it, which was just like, it was an incredible experience.
Which episode was it?
Yeah, what was the scene?
I think it was episode 506. It was episode.
He pretends to look something up like he's checking.
It was episode 506, Gentleman's Intermission. It was like an under five, like co-star where I had like a couple lines and then they cut away from me. But the part was that in the episode, Jack Donaghy is looking for someone to mentor. He's looking for a protege, and he's talking about how everyone he meets just like isn't meeting his standards. They're not reaching his like high level of expectations. He says Elizabeth Banks is in the scene with him because during that story arc, he was dating Elizabeth Banks' character.
Is it really that difficult to find someone new to mentor?
It's impossible. I've cast a wide net, but even the junior executives here, there's something wrong with this generation.
Hey, are you Jack? Sorry I'm late. BT Dubs, I gotta leave for my ironic kickball league in about 10. Also, I'm not interested in this position unless I'm gonna be constantly praised.
And then like he rolls his eyes and then the scene's over. But like I got to be in the show and it was like, I think that moment made me realize like, oh, like this is what I wanna do. Because for such a long time, I worked in production and I took improv classes, but I sort of had like one foot in, one foot out. I'm like, you know, I think I just like want to work in TV, but I don't think I actually like want to pursue being an actor performer. And then when I actually got to do it and I got a little taste of it, I'm like, oh, this is what I want.
Right. Exactly. Nice. This is amazing. No, this is it.
So those are my two best memories from the show.
I love it. James, those are two great best shows. Game of Thrones, 30 Rock. What is in your favorite category? What's your first favorite show?
Okay, first favorite is Mr. Show with Bob and David. For those of you who are listening to this podcast, weren't familiar with the show, it was a sketch comedy show on HBO in the, was the mid-90s, early 2000s?
Mid to late 90s.
Bob Odenkirk, who everyone knows from Better Call Saul, Breaking Bad. David Cross, who everyone knows as Tobias Funk from Arrested Development. But
is it Funke
or
Funk?
Anyway, that show is near and dear to my heart because I remember catching it during its first season, like late night on HBO. It was like, I think it aired on like Friday nights on HBO. And I was like, I don't know, 12 or something like that when it first came out, and being blown away because I had seen SNL. I'd watched SNL since I was like 7 or 8. I had seen Kids in the Hall because they used to play Kids in the Hall reruns on Comedy Central. And SNL, you know, is more broad and like mainstream. Kids in the Hall is like a little weirder. And then if you look at on the spectrum, like Mr. Show is like even further down. And also because it was on HBO, they had the license to do like whatever they wanted. They had almost no censors. And for me as like a 12-year-old, and this is like pre like internet video comedy and right. pre-internet sketch comedy. And so to get a taste of that and see like what you could do with sketch comedy, like blew my mind. And the absurdity of some of the sketches just like, I think sort of formed my sense of humor a lot without me even realizing it.
Right. So this is one of the maybe lesser known sketch comedy shows in like the,
yes,
the zeitgeist. You know, you mentioned it's weirder, but like what were some sketches or characters or moments that people might recognize or may have broken through? We'll play some clips on the show. So anything that you think
great
people should check out, we'll toss in here as well.
I love that. So what a lot of people forget about the show, because a lot of people now just watch individual clips.
Right.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people forget about the show is there was a seamless transition from one sketch to the next. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of like, you ever seen the movie Slacker with Richard Linklater?
Mm-hmm. No.
In Slacker, it takes place in Austin, Texas. It starts with two characters having a conversation. That person leaves, and then that person has a conversation with another person. So the old person leaves, and that new person then has a conversation. So you only see one character in two scenes.
Right.
And then you never see them again. But there's always like one person as a bridge from one scene to the next.
Right.
And so like their scene transitions were sort of like Slacker, where like somehow this entire sketch show existed in the same world. So like there would be like a sketch that was happening on the street and then like on the sidewalk, and in the back, in the far back, there'd be a storefront and you'd see something going on in the storefront. They'd zoom into the storefront and that's where the next sketch was.
Right. It reminds me of like these terms that we like cling to and use now, like, you know, it's the Mr. Show, you know, sketch universe or extended universe. And it, mm-hmm. it right. kind of feels like these concept of like runners or like one shot that kind of goes through multiple scenes that a lot of shows will do now. Like this was all stuff that they were doing back in the mid 90s with a sketch comedy show.
Right. Right. Or like there'd be a sketch that was like a talk show. And as a transition, they would zoom out and then it'd be like practical, like on the TV.
Right.
And they would zoom out and then you'd be in a new sketch and they'd like turn off the TV and start a new sketch. That blew my mind.
Yeah.
I just thought that was incredible. I just also like love the absurdity of the show. Like there's one, the audition is a classic sketch mm-hmm. where a guy is auditioning, but the scene he's chosen is a guy auditioning. And so they keep thinking the people who are running the audition keep thinking that he's breaking, but he's not, he's actually doing the scene the whole time. Then there's one called Pre-Taped Call-In Show, where people are calling in, but he's like, no, sorry, right now you're calling in about last week.
Good evening and welcome to the pre-taped call-in show where we tape all our shows a week in advance. I'm your host, Ken Doral, and let's try it again. It's really not that hard, okay? Our topic, once again, is the elderly, okay? We're taping it now and it airs next week. Okay, so if you're watching me talk about the elderly, don't call to talk about it. It's too late. Instead, call about cooking, which is next week's topic. Okay, if you wanted to talk about the elderly, you should have called last week when our pet care show was airing, but we were taping the elderly show. Okay, so here we go. Hello.
Yeah, hi. What's going on? I mean, you're doing a show about pet care, but everybody's talking about racism.
No.
And then it becomes like a Russian doll where he keeps pulling TVs back to show everyone that this is the show that was on that they taped last week, but they're watching now. And then you see him doing that.
Oh, so really like a pioneer meta comedy too. Yeah.
100%. Yeah. 100%. But one of my favorite ones that isn't like super popular is Car Wash Change Thief Action Squad.
What a name.
And it was like a hidden camera show where they were trying to catch people who like detail the insides of cars who steal like 12 cents from a cup holder.
I want to go back and like watch the like, because I feel like I remember watching through the show, but like on DVD, because I think somebody in my dorm had it on DVD. And so we would watch it. But like my most recent memories of it are just seeing the like YouTube clips, you know, I forgot those transitions.
And also this was a show where so many people were sort of at the start of their career. Mm-hmm. And like the cast was incredible. Like Jack Black was one of the small, like part, small members of the cast. Like he was in like a part here, part there. Tom Kenny, who's the voice of SpongeBob SquarePants, was one of the main cast members.
Oh, wow.
Sarah Silverman. And then of course we all know Bob Odenkirk and David Cross now, mm-hmm. but like, it's just insane. The people they had both in the writer's room and on the cast there.
I love looking at, you know, classic sketch shows like that and looking at those tentacles and seeing who started there, where did they go next, who was influenced by this stuff. I love it. And I just looked it up. If you haven't seen Mr. Show with Bob and David, it is on HBO Max. Definitely check it out. I know I'm gonna. I haven't seen it in ages. It's been way, way, way too long. Great pick. I love it. What's your second favorite show?
So I think this is of the moment because like I just watched it during the pandemic. But I put Battlestar Galactica there.
Whoa.
Have either of y'all seen it?
Cool pick. I have. I've seen it.
I haven't seen it.
Wow. Great pick. I love this show. I watched it, binged it when I was unemployed the first time in New York. And it just kind of like kept me afloat. I was watching it on my phone for days at a time.
Right.
And absolutely loved it. Absolutely loved it. And have since gone back and watched it again and thought it was just as good.
It's so good. And I think for me, one of the reasons why I put it in my favorite, it's like you watched it during a time where you needed something to sort of get you through like a rough period. This was a show that my wife and I binged at the beginning of the pandemic. And I typically don't binge shows. So this was like one of the first times where I got an opportunity to do that.
Okay.
And for me, it was insane watching, and this show was made 10 years ago or something like that.
It was during the Bush years, because there was a lot of like commentary, meta commentary about that.
Yeah, I think it was like mid to late 2000s possibly. Yeah. But it was incredible how relevant the show is to what's happening today, especially what was happening when Trump was still president. For people who are listening who aren't familiar with the show, if you haven't watched it.
And let's not spoil it, because this is what I think people can go back and watch and really enjoy. Well, so let's try not to spoil.
Okay. I will try not to spoil, but what I'm going to try, it's super relevant today. Like there's a character in it who's sort of like a Trumpian character. You know, I'm talking about the doctor, Dr. Baltar.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who's like very charismatic, but probably isn't like a great leader. there's a few episodes about military occupation that are, that I feel like are very relevant today and like living in a police state. And also like having citizens sort of infiltrate a population to help police people. And there's one, so I don't want to, like you said, I don't want to go in too much to spoil anything, but there is a quote in the show from Edward James Olmos, who is one of the main characters, Adama.
Yeah, he's the captain. He's the commander.
Commander Adama or Captain Adama. He says, there's a reason you separate military and the police. One fights the enemies of the state. The other serves and protects the people. When the military become both, then the enemies of the state tend to become the people.
Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's resonant. Yeah. Shit.
It really is.
And it was the show that in a way is like a very campy sci-fi show would occasionally just drop these incredible like pearls of wisdom.
Yeah. You know? It had a lot of, And it had a lot of things going for it. Like it was one of those kind of mystery box. How is it going to end? Yep. What does this all mean? Will they stick the landing in the finale? It was one of the earlier ones of those. And I thought the finale was great. There's certain aspects of it that some people have problems with specific characters.
Right.
I think Starbuck specifically, we won't say anything more than that.
Sure. Yeah. No, I hear what you're saying.
But also it had like, just like some iconic moments. Like the first time I like gasped at a flash forward time jump was that 2-year time jump early on. And I was like, whoa. So like it definitely had some of those bingey hallmarks that you see now without coming up in the binge era of TV, I think.
Right. Like I think if this show had been out today on a platform like Netflix or Hulu or Amazon Prime Video or Peacock or one of the million other streaming platforms there are, I feel like it would have been much more well received, because this is a show you binge. This is not a show you wait a week to watch again.
That's right.
That's good to know. I feel like I never got into it because I just assumed it was kind of like what I assumed with Game of Thrones. I was like, I don't know about like sci-fi and like wizards. Like, I don't know about space. And so, like, it just, it never was really on my radar. But then I feel like I hear amazing things about it. And it's like, I got to just go watch.
I think you should. It's a formative show that you'll like recognize things from it. There's obviously like cultural references that have come from it. And I think even it becomes more and more relevant, not just for all the things that James mentioned with the police and the people and the military and how that all intersects. But at the core of it, it's a show about what happens when the machines get so smart they outsmart the humans. It's about AI and singularity and like the thing that we're all approaching more and more every year. So it weirdly gets more relevant the more time goes on. And it's
100%
good stuff. Good stuff. Two strong picks.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we'll ever see this duo of favorite shows, Mr. Show with Bob and David and Battlestar Galactica. I dig it. James, what I think is the most intriguing category, what are your forever shows? What are you watching on a loop from start to finish? And a couple things here that I'm not sure that we specified. You're watching from pilot to finale over and over, so you can't jump around seasons. You can't pick and choose episodes, but you can go back and forth between the two shows. So you don't have to do one and then the other. You can go between the two if you'd like.
Got it. So one of these picks was going to be The Simpsons, but I had to bump it to almost. So my first forever show is The Muppet Show.
Whoa, fun.
The original one. Yeah.
That's what I was going to ask, the original one or the what's on Disney Plus now?
You can watch the original one now on Disney Plus, which is great. And I know they just did a new one, which I need to watch. And I'm not talking about Muppets Tonight because woof. And I'm not talking about the short-lived ABC single cam Muppets comedy because also woof. I'm talking about the OG Muppet Show.
Okay.
Which I think was like 75 to 81 or something like that.
So the Muppets they're not a blind spot for me because how can they be if you're alive and consuming anything? But I haven't gone on a deep dive into them. What about the Muppets resonates that you'd want to watch it? And it's not like there's a ton of like 6-7 seasons. How many episodes a season? That's pretty decent. But what about it puts it in the forever category?
I think it's I don't know if this is a word, but it's rewatchability.
Yeah.
Is one. I think also the nostalgia. It's like there is something about watching the show that accesses the joy that I experienced watching it as a child. And similar to what I was talking about with Space Ghost Coast to Coast and Cartoon Network, the Muppet Show and all of Jim Henson's projects and characters had the ability to build this world and build these characters where you felt like they existed somewhere. You didn't feel like these were just characters you were watching on TV that were shot in a film set. I felt like this was a real place. This was a real show somewhere in the world. And I could run into some of these Muppets on the street, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that magical ability to make me feel immersed in the, you know, comings and goings of these characters is why it's just like so special to me.
Yeah. Brandy, what's your experience with the Muppets?
I feel like I watched the Muppets a lot growing up because I feel like my parents liked the Muppet Show. And I was more of like, I watched a lot of like Muppet Babies. Like, remember that cartoon?
Oh, I loved Muppet Babies.
Yeah, that was like, Muppet Babies was my jam.
I liked Muppet Babies a lot.
But like, I've always had like a special like place in my heart for Kermit the Frog.
Yeah.
Like just of all of like, of everybody. Miss Piggy, not so much. But like Kermit the Frog and like Fozzie the Bear.
Yeah.
Like I loved. And I mean, I also really liked all the kind of the Jim Henson characters and stuff, but I will say that the Fraggles like scared the shit out of me.
Oh, I loved the Fraggles.
Everything about the Fraggles and like that guy that like lived in that cave with the like, he was so scary. but I definitely appreciate like the nostalgia of it. It's like, just like, I just like Googled and I'm just looking at like Google images and it's like, oh yeah. Cause it's like, I probably haven't like really thought about the Muppets in forever.
Right.
Like looking at the two guys in the
Statler and Waldorf.
Yeah.
Statler and Waldorf, the guys in the balcony.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it brings back a lot of good memories. I hear the theme song.
Yeah.
And I think what's really cool about the Muppets is like, you can say I wasn't a huge Muppets person, but have also watched Sesame Street your whole life. And guess what?
You're a Muppets person.
You know? 100%. Like kind of permeate so much of pop culture. James, have you liked any of the recent takes or recent versions of Muppets? I know like one standout that I'll watch once a year, every year, is Muppet Christmas Carol.
Sure. That's, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's classic.
Muppets Take Manhattan.
Yeah. Like I think the classic Muppet movies are incredible. Great Muppet Caper, Muppets Take Manhattan. Muppet Christmas Carol is great. I do feel like there was a period when the stuff they were doing was not, the quality wasn't as good. Like Muppets in Space was a little disappointing to me. And I think what sort of reset it for everybody was, well, first of all, Disney bought the rights to the Muppets from Jim Henson's company. And then I think what was like the reset for all this was when Jason Segel wrote the newest Muppet movie.
Right.
That came out. He wrote and starred in it.
Bringing it full circle. Jason Segel of Freaks and Geeks. Right?
Yeah. I love Jason Segel. And I do you guys know the story about how he got to write a Muppet movie?
No, I don't.
Was it from? Oh, yeah. Well, no, tell. Because I feel like it
starts from Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
That's okay. Yeah.
So at the end, you know, he does like the Dracula musical and they incorporate puppets into it. They used puppets from Jim Henson's workshop. He got to know some of the people who work over there. And then I think he either had a meeting with Henson or Disney and told them he wanted to write a Muppet movie. And I think they laughed at him when he said it. And he's like, no, I'm dead serious. This is what I want to do. I think I'm recalling this correctly, but I thought that movie was so freaking good and was able to sort of recreate some of the magic of like the early, like golden era of the Muppets. Mm-hmm. And I think was able to sort of reinvigorate that franchise for a new generation.
Great pick. This is a really fun list, James. I'm digging it. What's the final entry on your top six, your second forever show?
My second forever show is Mad Men. Oh, look at that. Hell yeah, dude.
I'm wearing a shirt with Don Draper pointing at an easel that says voting is cool on it. But it's a Mad Men shirt. But anyway.
So there's a lot of reasons why this is in my forever show. First of all, I had to put a drama in there. I put Mad Men in there because I think it's like one of the best shows of all time. And, you know, I was also considering like putting Sopranos in there. Like Sopranos could have been in my almost list. But Mad Men is such a smart show. And it's also like, I feel like there is a lot of subtlety to what is happening. A lot of what's happening in the show, I feel like, is not in the dialogue. It's happening in the space in between. You know what I mean?
It's dense.
Yeah, 100%. And I feel like this could be my forever show because I feel like I could go back and watch it over and over again and continue to find things that I didn't pick up on the first time. I love how watching this show is in a way is like a time capsule. Mm-hmm. to a different time. And like, I'm not saying this was a better time, but like there's something about 60s and 1960s and 70s, like contemporary, like style that I love. And I don't know if it's like a nostalgia thing because like when I was born in the 80s and that's sort of like what I was familiar with, but there's just something about that style and aesthetic that I adore. And so like, I could watch the show on mute because it's just such a beautiful show. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's kind of that sentiment has kind of come through in both of your forever shows. I mean, the Muppets is a show of the 70s and early 80s and,
right,
you know, Mad Men 60s and in early 70s.
I will say that aesthetic is very much my shit. Like if we were going to be talking movies, like some of my favorite movies are movies from the 70s. And like, if I could like design a dream house, it would be like something out of like that sort of like style and aesthetic. And I love like I love retro technology. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's why I like Wes Anderson shit so much, is because like he tries to do like a 70s aesthetic twist on the modern world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I want to go back to Mad Men. What are, what are some favorite characters, favorite seasons, storylines? Like when you think about Mad Men, what are the first couple things that pop in your mind?
That's a good question.
We'll put it this way. If you're watching this on a loop forever, what are the stretches that you'd get most excited for every time you rewatch?
I like the season where Don goes and spends a lot of time in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. I think it was for not just for the characters in the show and the plot, but for the viewers, it was like a breath of fresh air. It's like, cause like New York is, I know the show was shot in LA, but I think the pilot might've been shot in New York, but like it, New York is so like cluttered and jammed and claustrophobic.
Yeah. Smoking indoors.
Totally.
Thick clothes, you know?
And then they, he goes out to this new shiny place with all this space and it felt like, oh, we can all breathe easy now.
And the aesthetic of LA and Southern California in the 60s is really nice.
Just I love it.
The colors, the brightness. I'm just, I want to live in a house in Palm Springs in
1965. 100%. 100%. So, like, some of the characters that really stick out to me, Roger Sterling. And I think the reason Roger Sterling sticks out to me is because he, like, reminds me of my dad in a way.
Sure.
My dad was like a real estate developer and like was always like dressed to the nines. Like he wasn't like a big drinker or smoker or anything, but like I think aesthetically it just reminded me a lot of my dad.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I loved Trudy Campbell, Allison Brie's character.
That relationship was a wild ride.
Totally. And just like Allison Brie is just so funny, but she had a way of being like very funny and lovable in the show that worked within the parameters of the genre. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And also one of the characters that I really enjoyed was Bob Benson, who is played by James Woke. I don't know if I'm saying his name correct.
Oh yeah. The iconic, not great Bob.
Hold that. How are you? Not great, Bob.
Yeah, not great, Bob. I say not great, Bob, all the time.
Same.
Totally. And so I love Bob Benson as a character because for such a large period of my life, I had this imposter syndrome, especially growing up, because I had like a weird upbringing where like, I didn't have like a hard upbringing, but I had a weird upbringing where like my parents, when I was born, were very well off. And then when I was like 7 or 8, like they lost everything.
Oh, wow.
But like we stayed in the same town and they would like lease a house and then we'd stay there for a year or two. And then the house we had sold and then we moved to another house. And throughout my entire childhood, my parents would try to like keep up appearances and still convince other people that they were still rich and successful when they weren't. And I felt like Bob Benson was always trying to prove himself and internally felt like he didn't belong there.
Yeah.
And I feel like we learn a little bit more about why that is because we find out that he's in the closet, but there was something about him wanting to be in this world of privilege, but feeling like he didn't belong there. And in feeling that he didn't belong there, felt like he had to overcompensate and work that much harder to please everybody.
Yeah.
And like, that was me in high school and that was me in college. And it wasn't until I left college that I realized that I didn't have to be like that anymore. So like the character just really resonates with me. Mm-hmm.
I think that's what I like about this kind of exercise, and it's tricky and it's tough and it makes you make choices you maybe not would have liked about which show goes where and what was left out. Yeah. But just something like that, thinking about like, why do I like Mad Men? Why does it stick with me? What aspects of it stick with me? I think is something cool that, you know, I do a lot in TV. I process emotions and feelings based on, you know, things that are reflected at me and use that to, you know, think about my own stuff. And I think that's what's cool about a lot of these shows.
Yeah. And also like, I think Pete Campbell's a great character because Pete Campbell is like a cautionary tale of like, he's like a cautionary tale of like how a man can like so easily, but also gradually die inside.
So James, I want to throw you a wrinkle that we haven't brought up. What if we told you that for one of your two forever shows, you get to watch the series every time like it's the first time? So you watch it, Men in Black, memory wipe, it's like you've never seen it, and then the next time it's like the first time. Which of these two shows are you going to first time watch every time?
So I want to say Muppet Show, but I feel like part of why I love that show so much is the nostalgia from the childhood memories. So without that, without that context, I think it wouldn't be as enjoyable to rewatch. So I'd have to say Mad Men.
Okay. I like it.
Well, Mad Men is a good one to watch like it's the first time because like there are like, I mean, it's a good like drama show. Like, there's twists and turns. It's like, what's going on with Don Draper? Do I love him? Do I hate him? What's he doing? Why is he such a jerk? What's Betty doing today?
We didn't even talk about Betty. My goodness.
That's a cautionary tale.
Totally. I mean, I think so many of these characters are cautionary tales.
And then there's Don Draper, who's like, just fuck him your whole life and you'll be fine. Have a Coke.
Yeah, I don't know. what did we learn from his arc, right?
Who knows? You're going to not learn it over and over again forever and forever.
Yeah, like if you're charming and one of the most attractive men on the planet, you're going to be fine.
Yeah, your life is going to be great. Stolen identity or not.
Tale as old as time.
Sorry, spoiler alert.
I love it. James, what a great list. So to recap, Game of Thrones and 30 Rock are the best shows that James Coker has ever seen. Mr. Show with Bob and David and Battlestar Galactica are your favorite shows of all time. And you would watch The Muppet Show and Mad Men on a loop forever. Great list. Brandy, of these six picks, which one sticks out to you? What's most interesting?
I love Mr. Show with Bob and David. Like, I'm a huge, David Cross's comedy, his album, it's the album that came out probably like around like 2002. It's the one where he talks about being Jewish and living in suburban Atlanta. And he says that, he's like, you know, it's like one of those neighborhoods where, you know, it stays white out later, you know? But I also I'd forgotten that, like, I really love Mr. Show and I'm so glad it's on HBO Max. I want to go back and watch.
Heck yeah.
Because it was so funny. Like, he and Bob Odenkirk were they're great. And you forget how funny Bob Odenkirk is.
Funny.
I mean, he's so good as Saul, and he's still got that humor there.
Yeah, the timing's still there and all that.
But he's a funny guy when he's just being goofy and crazy. Like, it's really nice.
He also plays a really good character on the Larry Sanders Show. If y'all have ever seen that.
That's also a great show.
Plays the manager who ends up screwing Larry Sanders over. Sorry, spoiler. But yeah.
You're spoiling every show that came out in 1996. So 100%. If you're listening and you're not ready for that, we're sorry.
I just watched the Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling. If you guys haven't seen it yet, it's unbelievable.
Right. Yeah, the two-part doc.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's great.
Is that on HBO Max?
It is.
It was HBO, yeah.
If we had done this podcast 4 months from now, I probably would have put Larry Sanders Show up there, but I haven't finished it. I'm like, I only watched like the first two seasons.
Right on. Well, I mean, this list, it's a moment in time, right? Come back in a year, season two, and we'll see what's changed.
Hell yeah.
Dan, what stands out to you from the list?
There's kind of two shows in tandem that stood out for me. So my take on this list, it has a lot of really great nostalgia vibes, which I really dig. Yeah. And a lot of these shows remind me of my early years in the city, specifically working as an NBC page in 30 Rock.
Oh my gosh. You were a page?
I was a page, man. We got compared to Kenneth all the time.
My dream job, Dan. I'm dead serious. In college, all I wanted to be was an NBC page.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, a lot of moments, but my favorite moment happened specifically because of people's love of Kenneth. I was escorting Jerry Seinfeld and his wife. And for those who don't know, the SNL tapes of dress rehearsal from 8 to 10, and then cast eats and you do your thing. But during the break in between dress and live, people go out to eat. So Jerry's coming back and the crowd is getting funneled up through the elevators and moving on up to the 8th floor to the studio to find their seats. Mm-hmm. So it's wild. And we were like, you know, Mr. Seinfeld, we can bring you in through the basement if you'd like. And he's like, no, I'll just come in through the regular door. So I was for this one, I got to go down and escort him up. And as we're walking through, there's people in page suits and Jerry's wife is like, oh, it's like, what's his name? It's like, what's his name? And the first rule of being an NBC page was kind of like, don't speak unless you're spoken to, just kind of keep it moving unless like you're specifically addressed.
Yeah.
But I felt the opening. So we get in the elevator and they're still talking about it. Like, what's his name? What's his name? And I'm like, oh, you're Kenneth the Page. And then Jerry turns to me and he's like, so do you guys get a lot of shit for the Kenneth the Page? Do you get, you know, made fun of? And I wasn't trying to be funny. I just kind of like thought about it and go, eh. And he just starts laughing all the way up to the 9th floor. And I'm like, I threw a pitch back at Seinfeld and it landed.
You know why? It's because like you weren't trying to be funny. That was like an honest response. And that's why he thought it was so funny. Like, it, you know what all, you know what that response reminded me of?
What's that?
You remember in the Flintstones, how all of the appliances were like animals and dinosaurs?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'd be like, instead of a garbage disposal, it would be like some type of boar. And instead of like a record right. needle, it'd be like a pterodactyl yeah. who puts yeah. his beak down on the yeah. record. And they'd always, they would always be like, eh, it's a living.
Oh my God, that's right. And then the Muppet Show too. I remember giving studio tours. I don't know if you know this, James, but have you heard of the Muppet Pipes?
Yes. Yeah. 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 They're what are they? 6H or something like that?
6A. 6A. Which yeah. when I was there was Late Night with Jimmy Fallon, and it was yeah. at the time Steve Higgins' dressing room was a closet that had these pipes. And then years later, I think after Jimmy changed studios, they kind of like knocked down the dressing room and like encased these pipes behind glass right outside the stage door. So if you take an NBC tour to this day, you'll be able to see the Muppet pipes, which are really freaking cool.
I got to take a tour because I've been all over that building, but I've never taken a tour. Like I've never been to the top of the rock. Like I've been to the Rainbow Room when we like shot there, and I've been like all over 8H because they would use, whenever they were shooting exteriors at 30 Rock, they would use 8H as the dressing rooms.
Right.
And so we'd be up there and we'd sort of get to walk around, and it was like magical, you know?
Yeah.
But I have never seen the pipes.
Pipes,
I got to
cool.
see them.
Cool.
So before we sign off, we have three lightning round questions. And so with these, it's the opposite of the criteria. So don't overthink it and just answer with the first thing that comes to mind. Okay.
Great.
So first up, what is one show that everyone raves about that you've never gotten into?
Everyone Lost.
Oh, right. Sure.
Good answer.
I watched the first season, but then I didn't continue after that.
Ooh, wow. That's an interesting time to jump out. I respect it.
I was in college at the time, so I was just like busy doing cool college stuff. You know what I mean?
Didn't have time for no TV. Okay. What was your go-to cable channel growing up?
Either, I'd say Comedy Central or a Cartoon Network.
And what were you hoping was on when you tuned in?
If I was turning on Cartoon Network, I was hoping Space Coast was on, because I loved those characters. I loved Brack. I don't know if you know who Brack is.
Yeah, Brack, I remember like, Brack.
But I loved Brack. But yeah, probably Space Ghost.
Love it.
And then what is a book or a movie that you think should be adapted into a TV series?
Book or a movie that should be adapted into a TV series. Oh, Defending Your Life by Albert Brooks. Have either of y'all ever seen that?
No.
Not in like a really, really, really long time.
Defending Your Life is like one of my favorite movies of all time. And I would say that The Good Place is a version of Defending Your Life.
Oh, interesting.
It's like, it feels inspired by it almost, but I still feel like Defending Your Life would be an incredible TV show. If you haven't seen it, right, Dan?
No, I have not.
So it was like early 90s. Albert Brooks dies in like a car accident, I think, goes to essentially purgatory. It's called Judgment City, I believe. And it's like it's a city where you go and you're like, there's like buffets and you're staying in a hotel and blah, blah, blah. And then for like a certain amount of days, you go to a court that's just like a futuristic looking court that looks like a futuristic like conference room where there's a lawyer defending you, a prosecutor and a judge. And they review a certain amount of days of your life to see if you are an evolved being enough to move on to the next plane, whatever that might be.
Interesting.
Heaven or whatever, or whether you haven't evolved enough and you need to go back to Earth and give it another try. And so like, if you had a really good life and you were an evolved being, you'll have like, they'll review 1 day or 2 days or 3 days. And Albert Brooks says 9. So everyone's always like, how many days you got? He's like 9. And they're like, 9 days. It's a great movie. I highly recommend it if you've never seen it. I think it would be a great show because it could be like a procedural. So like,
yeah, Albert new person Brooke, every, yeah. yeah,
you review a new person's life every episode.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a lot of people don't like procedurals in comedy because they're like, we need to fall in love and be invested in these characters. You can write subplots for like the lawyers and the judges and everybody else that exists in Judgment City. And I would love to see the back of house of Judgment City. Like, who keeps this thing running? You know what I mean?
That's a great friggin' pick. And that's a movie that feels right up my speed. It feels
you would love it.
And yeah. It would probably be a good series right on the wave of The Good Place and The Uploads and like all of these kind of afterlife adjacent things. I love it. All right. With that, friends, this is a wrap on this episode of TV BFFs. Want to say thank you so, so much to our incredible guest, James Coker. James, one more time, where can we find you? What are you doing?
You can find me on Instagram at this James Coker. You can find me on TikTok at this James Coker. I'm doing a series of videos right now about former Dallas Maverick player Brad Davis that I'm pretty proud of. I'm going to be releasing those every few days. So look for those. And then other than that, you might see me on TV. I'm in a bunch of Spectrum commercials that have been running for like the last 2.5 years or so.
Do you get a call every time someone has seen it?
I get like texts and DMs and I love it. I love it. Every time someone tells me it's airing, I'm super pumped because it means that they're still putting it out there. And I don't know. That makes me happy.
I love it. Reach out to James when you see him on a commercial. And also please rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast. And check us out on Instagram at TVBFFpodcast or email us at TVBFFpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes, because we really want to hear from everybody. So reach out and send us your six. We want to know what your top six shows of all time are and where they fall in your own personal BFF criteria. So send us your picks and we'll share our favorites on the podcast. So until next time, goodbye, friends.
Bye, friends.